Hey guys, before I take you to today's content, I want you guys to take advantage of our Pro Web Legal Services initiative that we have going on right now in the second quarter of 2024. What is that? Well, it's a website that you get 100% full-blown website with 1 year maintenance, because with SSL certificate, hosting, etc., all for 50% less than the normal cost. This offer used to be $4,500. We're now giving it to you for $2,250, 100%, no strings attached. All you have to do is go to the show notes right now and click on the link where it says Pro Web Legal, and you'll get all the information. So until then, enjoy the show.
Welcome to Marketing Solutions for Local Law Firms, the podcast that provides you with all the latest digital marketing tools, tips, and strategies you will need to implement in order to stay ahead of your competition. If you are looking to substantially increase your caseload in the next 6 months, this is the podcast for you. And now, here's the host of our show, the local business guy himself, Frank Deming.
Hello, 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 everyone. This is Frank Deming, the local business guy. Welcome to another episode of Marketing Solutions for Local Law Firms. Happy Wednesday. Happy hump day, everyone. I hope you guys are having a rocking week thus far. Today is Meet the Attorney, another Meet the Attorney episode where we bring you the best attorneys here in the U.S. of A. And today is no different, as I bring you the great Zalor Stout. How you doing, Zalor? How's it going?
Doing great. Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, thanks for coming. I love to introduce attorneys just like yourself to my audience, because you never know, as we were talking outside before we hit record, you know, you never know who you can refer and who you can be a referral to, and vice versa, you know, never know. So with that, before I get into anything, only the questions that I have in my head to ask you so people get to know you, can you introduce yourself? Who are you and what do you do?
Not a problem. Well, my name is Zalor Stout. I'm the founder of Zalor Stout & Associates, which is a boutique employment law firm with our primary location in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And we have a satellite office in Pasadena, California.
Awesome sauce. Now, employment law, one of the reasons why I was so intrigued to have you on, Zalor, is that we have never had this topic here.
Really? Well, I'm glad to be the first one then.
We've had business law, we've had estate planning, et cetera, but never employment law. And when I saw this, I said, you know what? I have to have them on. So, you know, so that way you can, you know, break the barrier here. So explain to me, what is employment? I mean, we can all assume what it is, but give us a Reader's Digest version of what that is.
No, it's a really important question. So employment law covers areas of discrimination, sexual harassment, wrongful termination, and wage and hour. So a lot of times people as well think of employment law as covering employee benefits. That's a separate area. People think of employment law covering workers' comp. That's a separate area. So there's four areas that cover employment law: discrimination, harassment, wrongful termination, wage and hour. Those are the four main core tenets as it relates to employment law matters.
Interesting, because I actually was assuming that. So I'm glad I asked that question. I was assuming that it had something to do with that. Okay. Awesome. So let's talk about discrimination. That's a very hot topic. I don't want to get off to a really, really hot topic here, but hey, why not, right? What kind of discrimination lawsuits, if you will, are out there that you've seen?
Well, there's a lot. And so any employee will likely see these big posters with teeny tiny writing in their workplaces, which are required based on state and federal law. And those provide you with the Reader's Digest version as it relates to what protections you have in those workplaces. And so from a federal perspective, there are general areas that are always covered. So it's, you know, pregnancy, gender, currently sexual orientation and gender identity. And that's based on the most recent Supreme Court case, right? But there's no federal protection there from a legislative perspective. So it's something that came up through case law. You know, race is another aspect. But then you get to other areas. Disability is another one of the federally protected areas. But then in different states, some states provide additional protections to employees above and beyond what the federal law would provide. So sexual, HIV status, let's say, for example, could be something that's covered from a state perspective, but not covered from a federal perspective. Marital status, military involvement and things of that nature. So each state is really different. And that's the importance in regards to why there's different posters in the workplace. There's a poster that talks about federal law that provides the same exact protections for everyone, regardless of where you are in the country. And then there's a poster that outlines state law, which might be the additional protections that are provided to employees there.
So state law is an aggregate. It's something that adds to whatever the federal law protection is. Is there any state that has something that overrides what the federal law has?
So that's actually what the state law is. So more often than not, the state law is going to mirror exactly what the federal law has. And so employees have the ability to bring their claims in state court. But then as well, if there is a federal protection, they have the option of being able to go to federal court. But then states like California, Illinois, New York would be states that are providing additional protections to employees above and beyond what the federal law provides, especially in the regard to the areas of wage and hour. And so so that's the area where it would supersede it. So there are going to be circumstances where employees would only be able to bring cases in state court. They would never be able to bring it in federal court. Like that was the case in regards to sexual orientation and gender identity prior to the Bostock decision, where these are only protections that were provided to employees based on state law.
Gotcha. Interesting. Because, it's sometimes from state to state, things could be so different. Like I had a guest on here that was an estate planning, and it was so different from one state to another state. It was ridiculous. I was like, whoa, how do you keep this floating?
Well, here's the analogy that I provide to folks as well. If you think about the federal minimum wage, the federal minimum wage is the absolute floor in regards to minimum wage that anybody can be paid in the country. Yet, you'll have different states that have different minimum wages that are higher than what the federal minimum wage is. And you'll have different counties and even different cities that have minimum wages that are higher than the minimum. So states can provide additional protections for employees, but they can't provide less protections than what the federal law provides.
Gotcha. That makes sense. That makes sense. That's a good analogy. Thanks. That actually helps. So I always ask this question to anyone who comes on, at least for the first time. Out of all the law practices out there, why did you choose this one?
Well, I'm actually pretty spoiled. So the family business is outsourced HR. So my parents have an outsourced HR business that they've had for over 45 years now. Mm-hmm. And so I worked for the family business for 10 years before becoming an attorney. And so that is in the area of outsourced human resources. And a lot of that is administrative employment law. So those deal with unemployment claims. Those deal with wage and hour claims that are filed with the local city, county, or state government in regards to whether employees are being paid minimum wage or whether employees are getting paid overtime, whether employees are receiving the right breaks and things of that nature. And so working in this area, in this space, I went up against attorneys, and I was actually able to beat attorneys a bunch of times because the administrative employment law realm is a lot less rigorous as it relates to rules of evidence, let's say. They're a lot more fast and loose as it relates to what can be admitted and things of that nature. And you really need to know the form. And so my plan was always to become an attorney. So having already worked for the family business in this area and knowing that I'd be able to receive referral sources through employment law, it was perfect for me to go to law school, know that was a practice area I was going to work into. And once I graduated, to go right out and start my own law firm and know that I would have clients and business coming in.
Right. And how long have you been in practice?
So I've been an attorney since 2010. Awesome. But then I started with the administrative employment law stuff in 2000. So I've actually been in this workspace for 23 years now.
Gotcha. So if, I know you mentioned being, you're headquartered in Minnesota, you've got a satellite office in Pasadena. Can you help anyone say in New Orleans, anywhere throughout the state, New Orleans, New York, New Jersey?
Yes, interestingly enough, if there are matters that are addressed based on federal law, let's say there's a federal law claim that comes up, we can represent clients anywhere from that perspective, because once you're licensed and able to participate and or represent clients in federal court, that we can ask for the ability to be able to represent folks in those matters as well. Another area where we do a lot of work is some of this proactive work, which is a lot of workplace investigations. And so for a lot of our larger clients, that's kind of our sweet spot. We can get into that as well if you'd like. Mm-hmm. But with that, we can do those kinds of matters anywhere in the country.
Okay. Let's get into that since you mentioned it. Right. But you know what you talk more about that service, because that's intriguing.
Yeah. So the thing is I'm a senior human resource professional as well. So I have my certification through SHRM, Senior Human Resource Organization, that's for human resource professionals nationally. And actually, I believe SHRM is international from that perspective. So I have the ability to be able to speak to folks in HR and know HR speak, as well as having litigated cases, you know, speaking with the attorneys from that perspective. And so sometimes you'll have an issue come up through within your organization. So let's say there's an employee that files a complaint that they feel the general manager or somebody in senior leadership is discriminating against them based on, let's say, a disability. So they took some time off for FMLA and they're returning to work, and now the organization is looking at firing them. That's a prime example and opportunity for us to be able to come in and be an independent third party that does that investigation. Because sometimes when you have folks in senior leadership, a lot of times there are meetings together and things of that nature, and employees would think that it may not necessarily be an unbiased investigation. Mm-hmm. And so my law firm is actually triple certified. So we're minority certified, LGBT owned certified, as well as disabled owned certified. So there are, you know, larger companies as well as municipalities that hire us to come in and do these workplace investigations for them, because, you know, if anybody's going to be able to empathize with somebody that's a member of the LGBT community or somebody with a disability or somebody that's, you know, from a racial minority group, it's somebody that possesses that identity. Right. But then the other part is, I'm an attorney. My job is to call balls and strikes in regard to these things. I'm getting paid regardless of what the outcome of the investigation is. And so we're able to come in and build that trust and rapport with the complaining party immediately, be able to do the investigation and report back to the organization so that it's all actually still done in-house. And so the ability to be able to have the matters addressed in-house means that ideally the employee doesn't go out and speak with the plaintiff's attorney, and you're able to resolve the matter a lot less than it would cost for the matter to be litigated and or turned over to your insurance carrier.
Oh, that's all. That's great. That's great. You know what? You just made a reference that now I know why you're on the show and we can actually be friends. You made a baseball reference. You said balls and strikes. So let's stay on that realm. Let's stay on that balls and strike realm and give us some war stories of where you felt you hit a home run, where you didn't think, you know, it was bottom of the ninth, it was two outs, you thought you were losing, and you hit a home run and you came in clutch for your client. You give us one, at least one war story.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Hey guys, I hope you guys are enjoying today's content. While I have you on here, I want to introduce you to a promo that we have going on for the spring of 2024 for all legal practices throughout the U.S. I have an outstanding offer that we've never been able to offer before, but we want to do it because you have been an avid listener. We're only promoting this to people who listen to the show. So if you're an attorney and you are an avid listener to the show and you're thinking about possibly opening your own practice, you want to pay attention to this announcement. We are offering a full website with hosting, SSL certificate, online booking service, online appointment management, and more, and much, much more, with a 1-year maintenance, all for $2,250. That's $2,250 one-time fee, and you have a full-fledged website. If you want to know more about this, just give us a call at 888-416-7752 or send us an email at info@lbmsllc.com. Just make sure that you mentioned that you heard it on the show, and we'll definitely get you that discount. So with that, I'm going to bring you back to the content.
War story. All right. Well, these are some of the, some of the hard ones end up being matters with dealing with, you know, sexual harassment complaints.
Right.
So I recall there being one where there was an allegation that somebody in senior management had raped an employee. Mm. Right. So, wow. You know, yeah. Right. It's just all the way there. And you know, the issue was, you know, sadly it's this managers fraternizing with employees outside off the clock. You know, and so it's not a company sanctioned or organized event or anything. And so, you know, those are the things that we recommend that folks don't do. But then you have a situation where, you know, people get on a boat, people get drunk, you know, yep. And then, you know, he helps her back to the hotel room and she says something happened, though she doesn't remember anything that occurred. Right. And so it's really about doing the investigative work and digging into the details in regards to what happened after that. And of course, there was a big gap in time between when that incident occurred and when the complaint came forward. Unfortunately, there's many times when these types of complaints don't come up until, you know, the employee is about to lose their job due to some, you know, either misconduct or failure to follow organization's policies and procedures. And they try to bring out these different trump cards, right? And so, you know, we really dug in and did the investigation. I love Facebook and Twitter and, you know, all those instant messages and all those different types of things, because employees don't necessarily think that those types of aspects and avenues are available through the discovery process. And so what we found is that, you know, less than a week after this alleged incident happened, you know, she's going to a baseball game with this manager and her mother, right? And it's like, are these things that you would do if you felt as though that you had been violated, right? And so it's bringing all these types of things to bear from that perspective, because, you know, employees have the responsibility of being able to prove, you know, it's not beyond a reasonable doubt. It's beyond a preponderance of the evidence when you're dealing with civil matters. And so it's, you know, 50% plus one, right? And so if the jury isn't going to necessarily believe that everything's adding up from that perspective, then it becomes problematic from that perspective. And so we were able to get, you know, a very good resolution as it relates to that matter because of the additional digging that we were able to craft a story and a outline that really mirrored what the employer believed actually happened.
Wow. Well, that's interesting. You know, you're the second person that I've had on here that talked about social media and how it actually helps with cases. I had a family law attorney on here and we talked about something that was some other Facebook thing. And, you know, it was somebody claimed to be broke, but yeah, he was spending a lot of money and showing off and stuff on social media. It was kind of interesting. So
people don't think about it, but all of that stuff gets subpoenaed. It's all there. And you think you delete it, but they're able to track it down and everything. And a lot of times that stuff comes back to bite them. So, you know, tips for employees out there. If you're lying, saying that you're sick and you don't post that you're going to Disneyland or something, somebody's going to rat you out, especially the person that has to fill in for you while you're not at work.
Right. Out of curiosity, I'm going to switch gears a little bit here because what the topic of this interview is employment and human resources for small business and nonprofits. So I'm going to switch gears into the nonprofits a little bit.
Okay.
What exactly do you do for nonprofits? Is it the same thing like a small business?
It's the same thing. I mean, nonprofits are no different. They're still organizations that have employees, and they have to comply with all the same employment law requirements and rubrics that for-profit organizations do. The only difference is with a lot of times with nonprofits, there's a board of directors that are involved, that are a lot more involved in regard to these matters. And that's when things can get really dicey. So this is actually a perfect opportunity because there's been a trend in regards to complaints against either executive directors or board chairs within organizations that are nonprofits. And a lot of the nonprofits are on the smaller side. Wow. And the sad part is that, you know, a lot of times these organizations are so small, they don't have anybody in a human resource position, right?
Yeah.
Because they're like, I have 10, 15 employees. It's not necessarily something that's needed. Though if an employee feels as though that they're being discriminated against, harassed, they have to have somebody to go to. And most organizations that are small like that don't have a protocol in place in regards to what to do if the person you're supposed to report to is the person that you're alleging is engaging in the conduct, right? Mm-hmm. You have an executive director that is the highest person within the organization. You have the board chair, which is the highest person on the board. And so what do you do if it's one of those individuals that your complaint is against? So I really, really urge nonprofits to have an established protocol or procedure in regards to what to do under those circumstances. When is it? I mean, this is, sadly, this is a prime opportunity for them to get a third party outside individual to do the investigation, whether it's somebody that practices in the area of employment law or a human resource professional in regards that has expertise in regard to that area. Right. But this is something that I've seen hit organizations, a lot more organizations, especially over the last 5 years. I've seen a crescendo as it relates to those issues coming up. Mm-hmm. And it's really only because they've never thought outside the box in regards to what we should do in that type of situation. Right. It reminds me of the fire drill. You know, everybody knows about stop, drop, and roll because they beat it in you when you're a kid. And so it's like, you want to be able to have those protocols so that you're not called into question when you do something that's outside the norm within the organization. Right. Mm-hmm. If the board goes over and gets a third party to do an investigation and that's not something they've ever done before, then the question is going to be, why are you doing that? But if you've already worked through that, this is the appropriate protocol that we need to be doing, then it's not a surprise and nobody's caught off guard.
Gotcha. Out of curiosity, does your like someone files a complaint, right? Mm-hmm. And he's a board of director, if it's nonprofit, or if it's a, you know, the owner of the company, if it's a small business, what kind of protection is, I mean, I'm assuming that's a federal law. I mean, that's a federal level protection. What kind of protection does that person have? I mean, because I've seen the things on mostly on television where people get fired because, oh, they filed a complaint against us. Talk about that. What kind of protection we have for that?
Well, I'll cover two areas, right? Because just because a complaint comes forward doesn't necessarily mean that you're guilty of it, right? And folks are innocent until proven guilty. And so there are many investigations that are conducted where the results of the investigation are inconclusive. I mean, sadly, a lot of times when the complaints as it relates to harassment come up, especially with sexual harassment, more often than not, there's no witnesses. So it becomes a he said, yeah. She said, he said, he said, they said, she said kind of a situation. And so if there's no way to be able to corroborate one way or the other, and both individuals coming forward seem to be credible, sometimes the outcome of the investigation is that it's inconclusive. The good part still about doing an investigation is that it allows for the employee to know to have been heard in that scenario. And that now there is something that's on the record in regard to this complaint. So if more complaints come forward, then you can determine whether who's the common denominator in regards to all of these complaints, right? But the other aspect is a lot of people don't come forward in regard to these complaints because they feel as though that they're going to be retaliated against. Mm-hmm. And so there's always laws on the books from a state and federal perspective, especially in the employment law context, that prevent from retaliation, all right? Or at least provide a different cause of action for the employees to come forward after the organization. If they're treated differently after bringing their complaints forward. Mm-hmm. And so strangely enough, it's easier to prove a retaliation claim than it is to prove a discrimination sexual harassment claim. Because with the retaliation claim, let's say a woman comes forward and informs an employer on July the 1st that they're pregnant. She was always a crappy employee before then. She never really did her job, but they never wrote her up. And so they just kind of like chalked it up with, you know, but now they wanted to write her up because they're like, hey, she's going to be pregnant. We don't have to want to be able to provide her with time off and stuff like that. Well, if she can show that they're treating her differently once July 1st came, right? She was always late. When you look at the time card record, she was late 10 times in the month of June, never got written up. She's late to work 3 times in July. Now she's written up. If she comes forward with a retaliation complaint, it's stronger to be able, her retaliation claim is stronger than her underlying discrimination claim. Because is it because she's pregnant? Maybe not. But is it because she asserted her rights in the workplace and came forward with, you know, saying that she was, you know, pregnant or complaining about her paycheck or reporting a workplace injury or reporting some safety hazard in the workplace or saying that there's some type of discrimination or harassment going on in the workplace? So those are always the issues with retaliation. And so I always want to, you know, highlight and harp on folks in regards to don't forget the retaliation portion and piece, because that's a lot easier for folks to be able to prove.
Yeah, I mean, you're bringing up stuff that's so funny. So things deep in the database in my mind of when I was in corporate and some of the cases that I heard come up where people were fired because they did a complaint to HR. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden they were scrutinized, you know,
like, all of a sudden.
They made one complaint, and then all of a sudden they do one mistake and they're scrutinized, and then they get fired. And it's interesting, the human being, how our minds work sometimes.
And then the other part is, I mean, the longer you're with the organization, the stronger their case becomes, right? So let's say you have someone that's been there for 20 years, mm-hmm. and they've never had a poor performance evaluation. They've never had a write up, and so they come forward and complain about something, and all of a sudden they're a bad employee. I mean, I always say, you know, if it doesn't pass the smell test, you should really be thinking about it.
Yeah.
And these are the things that absolutely just don't pass the smell test.
Yeah, I know. You know, it's funny. One of my bosses, now that you're talking, I'm thinking about his strategy. He was very lenient, very lenient. And I'll never forget how he, like, anytime he would talk to you about tardiness or whatever, he would do it with a joke. Mm. But every single time he would follow it up with an email. He would say, hey, remember we talked about, you know, trying to get in on, you know, trying to make more of an effort to get here on time. I understand. Back then I was living in New York City. So I understand the subways are a little late, you know, sometimes, but, you know, leave earlier, whatever, make a concerted effort. But that's it. But he would always follow up with email. Now that I'm talking to you, I'm thinking, wow, that guy was really smart.
He knew what he was doing. Well, here's the thing. Like, a lot of managers, like, they don't want to be the bad guy, right? They don't want to be the one that's, you know, seen as being, you know, the disciplinarian and writing people up. And so I'm sure the manager was trying to, you know, make light of the situation and don't beat the employee up when they're there in person and having that discussion with them. But he knew exactly what he was doing by sending those emails, because that documents the date and the time in regards to the fact that this is a discussion that happened. And that's all that needs to happen in regards to a verbal warning. That's a verbal warning that was documented, so that if that kind of conduct continued, then the manager could refer back to those emails and include those dates in regards to prior infractions that they had spoken to that person about, so that when it comes to giving them the written warning, they can say, hey, on these different dates, I've had these conversations with you in regards to tardiness. Progressive discipline progresses, because if the employee doesn't improve in their behavior, here we are. And now he gets to include the dates on those emails in the dates in that write-up that he has, including the new most recent infraction.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, wow, you're in a very interesting practice area there, Zayla, I got to tell you. So you talk to us a little bit about your firm. Well, I mean, I know employment law is your sweet spot, but you also, you know, prior to hitting record, you talked about some other areas of law that you practice. Let's discuss a little bit about that as well.
Yeah, so a lot of the work that we do are with small and medium-sized businesses. I mean, there are some clients that we serve as general counsel for them. And so working in that space in regard to the employment law context, you end up having additional issues and questions come up, right? So you'll have, you know, oh, we have this contract that we're negotiating. Can you help us as it relates to that? So we have business and corporate attorneys that are work with the firm as it relates to those aspects. You know, you'll have clients that come in and then they're like, oh, you know, we have this intellectual property issue we're concerned. Do you have somebody at your firm that can help in regards to that? Issues that commonly come up with small businesses. So then we have attorneys that work in regard to the IP, you know, trademarks and copyright work. And so a lot of this work is with small businesses. So they'll be sole proprietors or they'll be partnerships. And so they'll need to, you know, set up dissolution documentation in regards to, you know, dissolving a business or succession planning. So they need, you know, wills, trusts, and estates. So we have the attorneys that are with our firm that can help in regards to that. There are areas that we don't have, you know, coverage, like criminal. We leave the criminal stuff to the criminal attorneys. Hopefully your company isn't getting involved in regard to that stuff. You know, so, but we do have referral sources for folks that need those referrals, but we haven't found the need to have, you know, attorneys, you know, formally affiliated with my law firm to be able to assist in regard to those areas. But when we find that there's, you know, example, yes, I do employment law, but we found that there are clients that have come forward in regards to employee benefits questions. right? Mm. And so now we have an attorney with our firm, and ERISA deals with that. And that's a federal law that provides protections for everybody nationally. So we have, you know, a very seasoned attorney that's been doing this for over 30 years that assists our clients that have, you know, either lawsuits or challenges as it relates to employee benefits. So as we find that our clients are in need of certain areas, a lot of times we refer folks out to other attorneys. But then when we find that there just is a constant need that kind of comes up, then we find ways to be able to affiliate with other attorneys that are working in regards to those practice areas that can provide that assistance and help to our clients.
So this has happened organically. You saw the need, you know, it's coming up more than once. Hey, maybe it'll be a good idea to have an attorney that does X, Y. Okay, that's awesome. I like that. I like that. That's a good way of doing it. You know, that's pretty snazzy. And how often do these, you know, how often do these things come up, these changes?
Well, the business and corporate one is the one that comes up the most. Because at the end of the day, you know, the employment element is one aspect of the business, but they're in business for a reason, right? And so they're likely doing business with other businesses. And so, you know, a lot of the contract negotiations and things of that nature, non-compete agreements and non-disclosure agreements and all those different types of things always end up coming up. And so I'd say that that's the practice area that's, you know, second in line in regard to the employment law, which is our focus. Mm-hmm. But then it whittles down a bit in regard to some of the other areas. When you're dealing with wills, trusts, and estates or intellectual property, really those deal with, you know, when the time comes, right? Sometimes you have businesses that'll, you know, they're just small and pop, mom and pop stuff. And they're like, oh, wait a minute, we have something here. We actually want to protect, you know, our likeness and things of that nature. And so as companies grow, we get to assist them in regard to that space.
I can see the tie with intellectual property. I'm failing to see the tie with estate planning, though, with what you do.
Oh, well, this is really with a small, a lot of the businesses that we represent aren't, you know, traded on the New York Stock Exchange. And so they're either family businesses or there's a sole proprietor or there's a partnership. And so, you know, with the estate planning element and aspect is what happens to the business if one of the partners passes away, right? Mm. Or what happens to the business when the sole proprietor of the business wants to leave it to, you know, their kids and things of that nature. Because unfortunately, we're not here forever. And so it's really thinking about that. I mean, there are folks that are interested to build businesses and then sell them. And so again, that falls more into the corporate business and corporate law aspect and element of it, as you do go through the due diligence process in regards to finances and all of that kind of stuff for folks that are interested in buying the business. But if folks are looking at passing it on to family members or their children, then that's really where the estate planning aspect and element comes in and the tax savings that can come about from either putting into a trust or things of that nature.
Awesome. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I didn't think of it at all. I didn't think about that. Yeah. They're all partnerships. You have to know, especially if something happens. Yeah.
True.
Interesting.
So you have to have those contingency plans in place as well in regard to that, right?
Exactly. So you pretty much got it all covered.
We try to. And if we don't, I mean, we have a great network in regard to stuff, you know, with other attorneys that work in other practice areas. I mean, it's strange. Some of the questions that come up, there's a new one that came up recently. I was like, I didn't even know if that was a practice area. It's always interesting and always new. And so that's why I love employment law. So the one thing that I'll say in regards to employment law is I always say it's the family law of the business and corporate world, because it has all the drama, but no kids.
That's funny. I like that. Yeah, all the drama with no kids. Yep, that is true. What is the website that people can come and check you guys out?
Yep. So the firm is Stouts, Stouts Law, LAW.com. So stoutslaw.com. And you can go on the website, check out our different practice areas and the attorneys that are there, our certifications, which some folks find to be beneficial, especially with the larger clients. You know, there's this whole supplier diversity aspect that is really, you know, a big deal from a large corporate perspective, as well as municipalities, making sure that they're spending money with small businesses and minority-owned businesses and helping, you know, diversify their spend. And so being a certified business assists in regard to those those areas and allows for us to be able to be a different and diverse voice in regards to the work that we're doing. And so we got all of that information there. And then we have like a, you know, tech person that'll get there and chat with you through the chat feature on the website as well to be able to answer some questions and get you connected with us.
There you go. Awesome. So I will put a link to your website on the show notes. So if anyone wants to reach out to you, they can. If I have your permission, I would love to also connect, put your LinkedIn on there.
Absolutely. Well. Please. So in case I know everybody's on LinkedIn. And I can assure you, I'm the only Zaylor on LinkedIn.
Yes. So he is easy to find. Even though I'll still put the link on
agreed. Thank you.
On the show notes so it can do that. But this has been great. I mean, again, this is the first time I've ever had anyone talk about employment law. So I was super excited. Thanks for educating me. And I'm sure the others who have been listening to are a lot smarter in terms of employment law. But before I let you go, I know you're a very busy man. Is there anything I did not ask you that you think will benefit the audience?
No, I think we really covered a lot of it. I mean, the main thing is, employment law tends to be a practice area that doesn't change a lot. And everything kind of got thrown on the wall when COVID happened, because everything was happening at a very, really quickly in a very short period of time. And, you know, a lot of folks weren't sure what was going to happen. And sometimes us attorneys in the space didn't know what was going to happen either, because, you know, you have folks on the federal, state, local level making decisions on, you know, quick decisions and stuff. And so what I'd recommend anybody that has employees always have access to either a human resource professional, so somebody ideally that's SHRM certified, or an employment lawyer to be able to assist you in regards to employment law matters. Many business owners, especially small business owners, are connected with a business and corporate attorney. If they're not specialized in employment law, they're not going to be able to assist you in regard to this area. And I've seen too many companies get in trouble in regard to that space. So mm-hmm. if there's drama in regards to employees, you really need to speak with an employment lawyer or have connections with an outsourced HR consultant or person that can assist you in regards to HR stuff. Have an employee file, have your personnel, your employee handbooks and things of that nature, and you can't be too small until you have, you know, somebody connected. I've had clients that have had two or three employees and then there's a harassment or discrimination or sexual harassment or, you know, wrongful termination or some type of complaint come forward. So you're never too small for these kinds of issues to come after you.
You know, I know I said I was going to let you go, but I have to tell you the story because had I known you when this happened, I would have been like, hey, I know the right person to call. Mm-hmm. I have a friend of mine who worked in New York City mm-hmm. During the pandemic. And of course, everybody was working from home. And then after some time, I think of a year or so, they started having light staff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was
like a skeleton staff.
But yeah. There were certain people who had to be there.
Mm.
And then they had a list and a B list. So that way it's not everybody on the thing. But yeah. My friend was one of the people who needed to be there all the time. Mm-hmm. There was no A or B list for her. And she complained and complained because she was really sick. I mean, and she didn't have COVID, but she just was like, you know, I'm scared. She was very, you know, she catches a bug without a problem. You know how people have their immune systems a little.
Oh, lower. Yeah. No, it's a true thing.
And she kept telling her boss, no, I can't. Well, you know, hey, this is, we need you. You know, we need you. Mm-hmm. And she thought she didn't have a case. Here's the long story short. When everything finally opened up, she just basically looked for another job because she thought she didn't have a choice. Like she mm-hmm. thought she had to do what her boss was saying, even if she felt uncomfortable. So anyway, just wanted to share that story. So now I know someone that could have probably helped her at least listen to it and see if there was a case. Anyway.
Yeah. And the thing with employment law is that a lot of these cases are very fact specific, right? And so, you know, depending with that particular scenario, it could depend on, you know, what time it was in the pandemic. If it was towards the beginning of the pandemic, the middle of the pandemic, the end of the pandemic, right? The knowledge that people had in regards to what was allowed and wasn't allowed changed because a lot of folks were even waiting for the Department of Labor to be able to, and OSHA to be able to make decisions in regards to providing advice and guidance to these companies around the country in regards to what they could and couldn't do. And so it was really, you know, a crazy time from an employment law perspective. But one more tip for your folks, the good tip that I can provide them, the one thing they need to look up after listening to this podcast is ensure that you have EPLI, Employment Practices Liability Insurance coverage. Most small businesses have business insurance, but EPLI is the only one that could cover matters of like discrimination, harassment, wrongful termination. Wage and hour is not an area that can be covered under these under any insurance. So you need to make sure that you're paying people right from that perspective. But look up, and it's a rider that you can add on. It really normally doesn't cost that much. But that's the biggest tip that I can give folks. Otherwise, you're going to be having to pay folks like me a lot of money for an hourly rate out of pocket in regards to stuff. So I just saved you hundreds of thousands of dollars from your first case.
Get
that EPLI coverage.
EPLI coverage. Well, thanks a lot, Zaylo. Mm-hmm. That's coming in the ninth inning.
Home run.
Yeah, home run. There you go. Awesome, man. Well, thanks a lot. You're definitely a wealth of knowledge. You educated us with a lot of stuff today, and I really, really, really thank you once again. So I'm going to put an end to this episode. Everyone, this has been Frank Deming, the local business guy. You've just been blessed by the great Zaylaw Stout. Until next week, take care and peace out.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Marketing Solutions for Local Law Firms, the podcast that provides you with all the latest digital marketing tools, tips, and strategies you will need to implement in order to stay ahead of your competition. If you would like to know more about the topic we discussed in the show today, reach out to Frank and his team at 888-416-7752 and schedule a discovery call with one of the marketing consultants. If you'd like to be a guest on our show, send an email to podcast@lbmsllc.com and we will put you on the schedule. With that being said, until next week, make it a successful digital marketing day. Peace out.